Creature roaming the state. Jody Cook, along with his group, the Ohio Center for Bigfoot Studies, has been collecting data and evidence on the existence of Bigfoot, also known as the Grassman in the state of Ohio, for the last 15 years. Jody Cook has also been seen on the History Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, and the Learning Channel, and is now on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network, bringing you Ohio Crypto Radio.
Hello and good evening, everyone. Is everyone able to hear me? Okay, is everybody hear me now? All right, tonight we got a good show. We got Billy Willard from Virginia Sasquatch Watch. Billy's an old friend of mine. We've done a lot of stuff together. We're both with the American Bigfoot Society. He was just on an expedition this past week. Hold on, Mike, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, you should be good.
Okay, good. And stuff. I'm a little bit echoing there, but we both did expeditions together. But he did an expedition down in Virginia there, and he's going to talk to us about it. But first, I want to go over a couple things. And next weekend, the 14th, 15th, and 16th is the annual Bigfoot Conference up in Cambridge, Ohio. It's at Salt Fork. It's going to be a big conference. If people can get out there to that, if you're able to get up there, that would be great. Bob Gimlin's going to be there. Quite a few. Dr. Meldrum's going to be there, I think, and quite a few other people. And also, like I said, you want to be looking out for the Monroe Falls Paranormal Society. They're going to be having a website set up for their event that's going to be on the 24th or 25th and 26th of June up in Akron, Ohio. So that's going to be a really good event. And if a lot of you don't know about IndyCon, that's coming up in July 23rd, 24th, and 25th in Indianapolis. That's going to be a really good paranormal conference. It's going to have a little bit of everything up there with that one. So, and so those of you who are here in Cincinnati, on the 24th of Eleven High School, they're going to be having a little sonar about the Eleven Frog, which is going to be real good. It's at 7 o'clock in the evening, so that would be something really good to go to if you guys are in the Cincinnati area and you want to go check that out. But what we're going to do real quick, we're going to go to a real quick break. We're going to go ahead and get our guest on, and we'll be back shortly. Thank you.
Tune in every Tuesday, 10 a.m. for ASPRN's only mid-morning paranormal talk show. AM Paratalk with hosts Mike and Lori will discuss the fun, the interesting, and the fascinating sides of the paranormal with a twist of family life. Tune in for a fun and lively hour with Mike and Lori on Tuesday at 10 a.m. for AM Paratalk, only on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Mike and Joni team up to bring you EVP Spirit Talk every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Mike and Joni from Egypt Valley Paranormal Investigations plan to delve into the unknown and unheard of the paranormal every week on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network, only at ASPRN.com.
Christopher Moon's Haunted Times magazine, voted the best paranormal magazine in the world by the International Paranormal Acknowledgement Awards, now comes to you live every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Join Christopher Moon, Dina Everling, and Paulette Huff as each week they welcome guests from all avenues of the paranormal and metaphysical realm, bringing you the best of the best, doing their part to help you think farther than you could ever imagine. Haunted Times Magazine Radio, Wednesday nights from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Paratrinity Radio airs live every Saturday on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Join hosts Mike and Ellie Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at ASPRN.com.
sponsored by HostYourGhost.com. Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred.
Okay, we are back, and we have Billy Willard. He is with the Sasquatch Watch of Virginia. Hey, Billy, how you doing?
Doing good, Jody. How are you?
Doing real good. Doing real good. Last week, I was not doing well. Last week, I was real sick. I was highly medicated, and I was trying to get through to my show and couldn't think straight. And so, Billy, tell us anything new right now that's going on in Virginia.
I tell you, there's been a rash of recent sightings down in Grayson County, which is in the southwestern portion of Virginia. They've been keeping the local newspaper down there pretty busy. It's a newspaper called the Declaration of Independence, and it's pretty funny, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
One of the towns there is called Independence, so they called it the Declaration of Independence. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
They've been keeping the newspapers busy. They've been keeping the sheriff's department busy down there. You know, people don't know who to call. We're currently trying to get a foot in the door, so to speak, to, basically talk to the editor of the paper and maybe get some information, and maybe some of these witnesses may come forth and talk to us.
Now, you deal with mostly Virginia, but you do stuff with West Virginia and stuff also, right? I mean, if there's a sighting along the borders there.
Yeah, we occasionally get over into West Virginia. We last year, last fall, actually, in October, we made a trip out to Dolly Sods. Dolly Sods is a wilderness area. It's not far from the well-known Seneca Rocks area. A lot of people know about that. That whole area out there is just nothing but wilderness and mountains. And I tell you what, we about froze our behinds off up there. It was, I think the high temperature was like 40. And it rained and the wind was blowing the whole time up on that mountain. So we all froze pretty good. But we had a pretty successful time up there. We had the West Virginia Public Broadcasting was there. The film crew was there. And they spent quite a bit of time with us out in the field. We did find some prints. Of course, we know those prints aren't very conclusive, but we did find some things. And other than that, you know, no visuals or anything like that by anybody. We did have some campers that were camping immediately to our. I'm trying to think of our situation. They were on another. They were further in the campground, probably. I'd say about 100 yards from us. They came over late one night and was trying to tell us that they heard something walking around down below. You know, they knew why we were there, and they kept telling us that they were hearing some things. So we sent one of the researchers went over there and kind of spent some time with them listening, but nothing ever come from that. But, you know, it was a good time. We always have a great time out there just investigating and just doing our thing.
Was that the one that Bruce was with you at?
Yeah, Bruce was with us. Yeah,
scared
he was
everybody
there.
With his knife.
Yeah, scared everybody with his knife. They interviewed him too. They've got that up on YouTube. It's at the West Virginia Public Broadcasting. So if you look it up, I forget what they kind of put our clip in there with a lot of Halloween specials and stuff that they were doing in October.
Yeah, it seems like that's what they do. It's just, you know. Anytime a newspaper cares about you or TV cares about you when Halloween comes around, and you know that's how it is with me. It's just like, you know, all we need a story, you know, for Halloween and stuff, you know. I think, don't care. They don't care about you throughout the, you know, the week and stuff. But you just recently went on a expedition with the American Bigfoot Society, and I wasn't able to go on that because I had prior. Engagements and stuff to deal with that. So why don't you give us a little brief on how that went out, how to start off and things like that. And I know, you know, can't give out the location or anything like that. That's understandable, but kind of give us a little insight of what went on.
Okay. Well, this was actually probably one of the most successful expeditions as far as cooperation that has ever been put together. I hate to brag, but quite frankly, that's the only way I can say it. what happened, and I tell you, we ended up releasing a press release to one of the local papers. But anyway, the expedition took place in an area in central Virginia, Spotsylvania County. It's within that county. And what we did was, I'll just kind of go over this real quick because I released this to the local paper up there. We called it a Bigfoot Sasquatch research taken to a new level. And we wrote to them and said, this past week, which was between April 18th and April 25th, 2010, history was made in Bigfoot research. For the first time ever, five separate Bigfoot research groups in the East combined efforts for the first ever multi-group Bigfoot expedition in Spotsylvania County, Virginia. The research groups consisted of Sasquatch Watch of Virginia, the American Bigfoot Society, Squatch Incorporated, and the Northeast Sasquatch Researchers Association, and the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. The expedition took place on over 200 acres of private land, and there were over 30 participants from 10 different states at the event. This expedition was scheduled due to a previous actual Bigfoot sighting on the property back in May of 2009. Since then, there's been several strange vocalizations, strange large footprints, and mysterious game camera photos that have surfaced. All of these occurrences urged us to organize this first ever multi-group expedition. All of those participating tried new ideas of research, and the cooperation between the groups was remarkable. During the expedition, strange vocalizations were heard, a subject was filmed in night vision video, and one participant had a strange encounter with something hitting his Jeep during the night. A possible footprint impression was discovered behind the Jeep after the incident, and the print was casted. All collected evidence is being currently analyzed. Although the mystery of Bigfoot was not solved, there was a major accomplishment with this event. For the first time, multiple groups came together for one cause without the usual infighting found in a lot of the Bigfoot research groups. Everyone cooperated, had a great time, and looks forward to repeating an event of this scale again soon. So that's what we had released to the paper, and I tell you, everybody just had a blast.
That's good. Did Eric Altman come down for that?
Eric was texting me every day because he couldn't make it, and he was bumming.
Oh yeah, I know. So was I, because I really, really would have liked to have gone on that, because that would have been. I mean, now you guys were out there what, 5 days?
We were out there for an entire week. Some people were out there for the full 7 days. We started on a Sunday and left on a Sunday. So yeah, it was pretty tough.
Yeah, well, I imagine it was. You mentioned something about a trail cam and night vision. Did that take place with you guys, or was that something that took place with another group at another time down there?
No, this all occurred during the expedition. We had Squatch Inc., Squatch Incorporated, Tim and Toby were out at a site one of those nights, and excuse me, I'd have to look at my notes, and I don't have them in front of me to tell you exactly which night. But they were responding to two other researchers that were in the woods. They had called us by CB radio to tell us that they were having some activity in their area, and they were a little concerned because they felt like they were surrounded. So what we did was we called Toby and Tim and had them to meet up with them because they were really wanting to come out of the woods. That was how drastic it was getting. So Toby and Tim went over and joined them. You know, they wasn't there very long before they started hearing, you know, what sounded to be bipedal footsteps around the area. They too were expecting, and this was Toby's exact words. He said he was expecting at any minute for some researcher to just step out of the wood line. I mean, he was so sure that it was a person walking that he was ready, you know, ready for the person to walk out. But he never saw anything. But during one of the times when he was hearing some commotion, actually two different occurrences, he's got night vision equipment where he's capable of recording video in night vision. So as he was recording, there's two instances where he gets what appears to be eye shine in the video. It's at a pretty good distance. As we all know, night vision's only good for 20 or 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was beyond that, so you could just barely make it out. But there's one instance where you see the eye shine, and it's almost like whatever it was almost like it was in a squatting position, and all of a sudden you see the eye shine rise, and I mean it just keeps rising. I'm like, wow. And it goes up quite a bit, and then all of a sudden it just takes off to the right.
No kidding. Do you see anything? I mean, were they seeing an image or anything?
No. What they're trying to do is get the software so that they can lighten the background a little bit, so that we can see if we can actually make out a figure. You know, because like I say, the distance was further than the capability that the night vision had. So obviously, the eye shine was being reflected from the infrared.
Mm-hmm.
So until we can get it lightened up to actually see what was back there, we just don't know what we filmed.
Oh, okay.
So that was pretty exciting.
So tell us about the incident where the guys were in the Jeep and they felt something was rocking the Jeep. And you mentioned that there was a possible track.
Yeah. That happened on Wednesday night. Unfortunately, I was not there that night. I had to come back to my office to do some work and go back till Thursday. Of course, all the fun stuff happened when I'm not around. But when I went back the next day, they told me about it. A fellow by the name of Gary, who's a member of my group, along with Brandon, who's also a member of my group, they were both situated in an area that was a very thick area. So what they did was they drove Gary's Jeep. He's got a Rubicon, and they drove it, you know, brush hitting the side of it. I mean, it's just really tight, and the brush, the undergrowth and everything, it's just as thick as it can be. Anyway, he drove his Jeep through there, went through a little bit of a kind of a wet area, almost like a little stream area, and got up on a hillside within this 100-acre property. And they were there for quite a while. You know, they were hearing some things. It was one point in time, and I can't remember the times again because I don't have my notes in front of me, but there was a point in time where they saw something coming close to their vehicle, and whatever it was, they said was very heavy. They were radioing, saying, you know, there's this loud stomping noise. Whatever this thing is, it's heavy. And it wasn't long after that they were sitting there, and all of a sudden the Jeep gets hit and it's rocking back and forth. So they both just kind of freeze, look at each other, said, did you do that? No. Did you do that? No, I didn't do it. And they just kind of sat there for a while to make sure everything quieted down before they were even going to step out of the Jeep. After everything kind of quieted down, Gary decided to step out of the Jeep. They walked around the rear of the Jeep and were looking around with lights, and they looked down, and lo and behold was a footprint right behind the Jeep. They figure that whatever it was hit the spare tire that was hanging on the back of the Rubicon, and you could see where something had stepped right behind the Jeep. You know, and it wasn't, you know, wasn't a deer print or anything like that. It was a good size impression.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we had it to do over, I think everybody would have probably chosen to cast that print that same night.
Night.
Because what ended up happening was they waited till the next day for daylight, and then went up there and casted it. You can actually see what appears to be possible toe impressions, not necessarily impressions, but like areas where the toes may have been, but it looks like it was filled in with silt. The soil was so wet there that it probably overnight, some siltiness and from the water and everything sitting in there probably obscured the track quite a bit.
But you guys got photographs of it, right?
They got photographs. Those photographs will, as soon as we get done, we're putting together the expedition report.
Mm-hmm.
And once that's completed, then everyone will be able to look at that on the American Bigfoot Society's website, which is AmericanBigfootSociety.com. so that we will post that on the website. It'll also be on Sasquatch Watcher Virginia and you know, NASRA. You know, everybody that participated will have access to that report.
Right, right. So now, when you were out there, you know, because you know, when you and I went down with the American Bigfoot Society, we went to down in Kentucky to do an investigation of a site there, and when we were up that particular area, you know, there was, you know, they had the three bait sites that were set up that obviously nothing touched it, not even a raccoon or anything. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that area, I mean, it was like, you know, the horses didn't go up there, the cows didn't go up there, the bulls didn't go up there. No one went to this particular area. And I mean, even though you couldn't really, you know, you couldn't hear the bugs, anything. I think we heard owls at night. I think that was the only thing. So was it out there? Was there anything like that where you were in an area where you just didn't get any activity of any critters out there, you know, bugs or, you know, birds or anything like that?
Oh, no, quite the opposite. That place is
wild.
Right.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There was an instance where some folks were walking down one of the roads that goes on the property, the gravel road, and they started hearing like this growling type noise. They couldn't figure out what it was, so they started walking a little closer. Well, lo and behold, it ended up being a bobcat.
Oh yeah,
and it was having a fit.
Yeah.
Now one of the other guys had reported they were walking one of the trails that goes through some of the real thick brush that's on the property, and they claimed that they are almost certain that they spotted a cougar.
Really?
Because they said it was a very large, you know, above, you know, the explanation was about hip height, you know, so that's a pretty good size cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had a pretty long tail and of course curled up at the end. So sounded like a cougar to me.
We got them here in Ohio. There was a friend of mine had a webcam set up in Brown County to look at the buck and stuff up there for when, you know, the deer season started this past year. And he got a picture of a cougar carrying a buck in its, I mean, dragging a buck,
wow,
you know, by the throat, went right by the trail cam. And the Division of Wildlife sat there and called him a liar, told him that that photograph was fake. There's no cougars here in Ohio, you know, and stuff. But people are seeing them. I mean, you know,
yeah,
and stuff. Now, you got a lot of bear down there in the mountains down there in Virginia, don't you?
Yeah, there's a lot of bear. As a matter of fact, it's funny. My mom was coming down Interstate 66, which is a major interstate that goes here through Northern Virginia. And she saw a bear cross I-66. So, I mean, yeah, you would think Northern Virginia wouldn't have a bear population, but we've got bears kind of overrunning some of the areas.
Oh, there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because I was wondering if you guys seen any, bear tracks or anything up there while you were up there and stuff. You know, because, black bear can be, they can be pretty nasty when they want.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think some people did find some bear tracks, but I don't know that any pictures were taken of them. But I do remember, I recall someone saying that they found some bear tracks.
Now, did you guys do any type of call blasting or any type of wood knocking, you know, or anything like that while you were out there to try to get any type of response or anything?
Yeah, pretty much each night we tried something different. One of the things that we felt we were very successful with was a vocalization of a baby crying.
Yeah, exactly.
We used that, and I tell you what, the woods seemed to come alive after we used that audio.
You know, to cut you there for a minute, I want to mention this. I don't know if people remember this. This past winter, there was a little boy that I think it was like 3 or 4 years old that was lost in the woods with just his t-shirt and diaper on, and he was out there for like 4 days, and I believe it was in Virginia or West Virginia, it was one there down there or Georgia, and the kids survived. I mean, you know, there were all types of predators out there, but he talked about the big monkey that helped him, you know, and you know, they kind of blew it off. that, this kid just saw he's making up this story, but he was, he talked about, the big monkey that, that helped him, food, water, and kept him warm and all this other stuff, and things. And this was just like I said, this is past winter, the beginning of the winter. And it was on, Fox News, CNN, and everything. I mean, they were really out looking for this kid, because like I said, all he had was just his underwear and, and a T-shirt on. He wandered away from the house and got lost in the woods. It was out there for 4 days, and they didn't think the kid was going to survive. But, the reason I was asking that, because, when you talk about call blasting, about using, children laughing, children crying, children talking or singing, it seems like you get a bigger response, than you do talking, doing a regular call blasting. Now, my guest I had on last week, Andrew, we were talking about this, that, if you, you got these guys taking these call blasts from California, the Sierra sounds and stuff like that, and they're blaming the Sierra sounds and different other Bigfoot sounds. What these Bigfoot language or what they're saying in the, West may not be the same thing that they're speaking in the East,
Right.
And they
right.
just, they can't, and plus when you play something audio, it's that low pitch that animals are going to be able to pick up, knowing that it's not an actual animal making that sound, it's something else making that sound, that we can't hear, but they can hear it. I find it kind of interesting, when people are using all these different sounds, they're not getting any response. But yet, when they use children's sound, laughing, crying, it seems like, like you said, the woods, comes alive.
Yep. I tell you, that was what we used that was the most successful. I mean, it really seemed to help. And I tell you, some of the researchers, that were out in there, all the areas that we had organized for everybody to set up, we had to, they were calling back on the radio saying, "Hey guys, that was really creepy."
Oh, yeah.
And it really sounds creepy in the woods, And,
sure it does. Because you sit there, even though it's a recording, it's like, come on guys, we got to go out and find it.
it's like, what are y'all doing to that baby?
Exactly. Oh, I know. And stuff, but
we did try other vocalizations also. We tried some of the classic vocals and things like that, but quite honestly we didn't get any results off of any of those classic sounds. We did do wood knocking as well, as you'd mentioned. We did do wood knocking. There was some limited responses, not all the time, but there were some.
Mm-hmm.
So that was somewhat successful. But a lot of the wood knocks coming back to us were very, very distant. They didn't sound very close mm-hmm. at all.
But you know what? Don Keating came down and did a conference here in Cincinnati a few weeks ago with me. And he was talking about that, like, the wood knocking and that there's sounds that that you hear, they're thinking that the wood knockings may not be actual wood knocking. It may be chest pounding or clapping.
Mm-hmm.
From a distance it sounds like it's it's wood knocking, but also that gorillas and chimpanzees will make that popping sound with their jaws,
right.
And stuff, and a lot of researchers are picking those up. They're hearing that, and which is a trait, of a primate. So, have you guys, heard anything similar to that, or when it goes to the wood knocking? I mean, is that something that you guys, when you guys are out there, do you consider that's what it could be, or just a piece of stick hitting a tree?
Well, some of it does sound wood on wood. But I have heard sounds that were a little different. Some people think that they may even be rock clacks. Just someone taking two rocks and hitting them together, because it has a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. I mean, as far as the like you're talking about, the jaw click or the tongue click or whatever they're doing, I do. You're right. I mean, primates do that. I've seen that. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, it could be.
Yeah. and stuff. So does the American Bigfoot Society got anything coming up that anything new that you guys are going to be doing? Any other expeditions
We're actually currently getting ready to discuss the next location. We haven't picked out the next location as of yet. So that's something that we're currently discussing in conference calls and stuff.
Mm. Now, you're one of the, I guess it's board members?
Yeah, I'm the vice president.
The vice president. Now, if there's someone out there that wants to join American Bigfoot Society and stuff, how would they go about doing it? Or do they just go to the AmericanBigfootSociety.com's website to fill information out? Or, you know?
Yeah, all they have to do is go to the website, and I'll walk you through it here. You go to the website, which is AmericanBigfootSociety.com. When you get on the main page, you'll see some navigation selections on the right side. And what you can do is, if you look, there's about midway down, there's a link called Become a Member of the ABS.
Mm-hmm.
And when you click on that link, it will pull up some information about the different, different things within the ABS. Like, for example, you know, we have a field operations section. We have a field support service. And if everybody doesn't have to necessarily be a woodsman, you know, to be able to go out and you know, do stuff like that, we have opportunities where people can, you know, be our information collectors, you know, for example, getting data from websites and, you know, looking at reports that come in and that kind of thing. But we have a membership application right on that page. When you scroll all the way down to the bottom, it's just a real simple thing, real easy to fill out. Just hit the submit button and it sends it right to us.
Okay, that's good. Now let's talk about a little bit about the conference that's coming up here in Ohio. What's his name? Just slipped my mind. The big guy that's going to be there, Gimlin. Bob Gimlin. And Jeff Meldrum's going to be there. Do you know who the other guests are going to be?
Actually, I can give you all that. Hold on just a second, and I'll pull my list up here.
Yeah, because I would
tell you everybody that's going to be there. You're right. Bob Gimlin, as everybody knows, is of course everybody's heard of the Patterson Gimlin film. Not too many people that haven't, but Bob Gimlin. He's getting up in age now, but he's a very nice fella. I met him up in Washington. He's just a great guy to talk to. Of course, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, you mentioned, is going to be there. Also, another fellow that's coming is Larry Lund. Also, Tom Yamarone.
Now, who is he?
Tom Yamarone is over in. A lot of people know Tom because he sings a lot of Bigfoot songs.
Okay, I know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people know him for that. And then, of course, John Horgan is going to be there. It's going to be. I think it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be different because I tell you what, you know, I've heard they're going to be close to 1,000 people there, you know, because you know the rooms are all sold out.
Yep.
You know, the cottages are all sold out. I know I heard that the hotels in Cambridge all shot their prices up. You know,
well,
that weekend. You know, the park is really gonna really be hopping with their. You know, and the only bad thing about it, you're not gonna be able to get nowhere out in the field because everybody is going to be there. But it's fun because, you know, I love the gatherings, you know, because it's,
you know,
everybody.
Yeah, it's almost like a big family reunion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, some people, that's where they meet each other every year, you know, to kind of catch up on things.
Oh, yeah. And then we had everybody pull with the Secret Sasquatch Society.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff. I've actually had people ask me about that, about, you know, how they could join the Secret Sasquatch Society.
that's kind of been an ongoing joke for a while. Everybody thinks it really exists.
Yeah, we that was just a joke that we made up for at the conference last year and things, and then the word kind of got out, and everybody was like, "Oh, I want to join now." You know, so obviously, yeah, we need to have a little ceremony and stuff, and you know, get everything out. That'd be fun, but. You know, yeah, this it's going to be a decent conference. Like I said, if anybody gets a chance to go to this thing, I mean, this you know, it's going to be hopping down there
Stuff.
So
yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to check it out, I mean, there is some information on the internet. Unfortunately, all the lodges and the cabins and everything are sold out. But if you still want to go, you know, at least be there for the conference event. You know, everybody can go to www.eobic.net and just click on the 22nd Annual Bigfoot Conference link, and it'll give you all the info you need.
Yeah, there's a lot of paranormal groups I know that are coming down just for the conference. They're leaving after. There's actually a group that's going to be coming down from, I think, Monroe Falls group is coming down from Akron that night, you know, for that, which is going to be... You know, interesting, and there are going to be a lot of vendors, you know, at this this one, and that's the best part is, you know, is all the vendors and, you know, things, so that makes it interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, we'll have a table set up as well. Sasquatch Watcher Virginia, we'll have some T-shirts with our logo on it. We'll also have some stuff through... the other group that I'm a member of, I'm a director of the AIBR, which is the Alliance of Independent Bigfoot Researchers, and I'm going to have some pass outs from the AIBR at the event as well. So,
oh, that'd be interesting, yeah, that's going to be cool and stuff. But as far as Virginia goes, how far back does the history of Bigfoot in Virginia? I mean,
I tell you, you know, there are some old reports, but one of the ones that I remember, actually, I'm gonna go back to my report form. There's probably one of the most well known ones here in Virginia is the one that happened at Quantico Marine Base.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the one that a lot of people know about. They called it the I'm going to pull it up here so that I don't mess this all up. But, yeah, it's Quantico Marine Base. It's actually fairly large. A lot of people don't realize how big it really is. But
I've been there,
yeah, there's a lot of woods out there. I don't know if I've got that one on the database or not. I hope I do. But, it was a Marine who had a sighting. Back in, I believe it was 1957, in that area. Now we still get a lot of sightings in and around that area. I mean, Quantico area, Prince William Forest Park is adjacent to Quantico. All of those areas have had quite a few recent sightings. So, you know, plenty of activity.
Mm-hmm. But you have nothing going back like. Prior, you know,
I don't have anything on my database. I think, and I'm looking it up right now, I think Bobby Short has some older things in Virginia, because I remember reading some things. Let me check and just make sure, but I know she had some. Let's see here. I'm looking it up real quick. All right, here we go. All right, here she's got one that dates back to 1883. This was actually in a newspaper called the Bucks County Gazette, and was in Pulaski County, which is down in southwestern Virginia, and it occurred in May of 1883. It says in the paper article, it said a ferocious wild man is reported to be roaming the woods of Pulaski County, Virginia, and making attacks upon people he encounters. He is said to be fully 6 feet tall, very muscular, and entirely naked, with long matted hair and beard. He has been pursued by parties, but he was too fleet of foot for them. a man found beaten to death in the woods is believed to have been killed by him. I mean, so, you know, that's something that dates back to the 1800s.
You know that one thing I don't know if you ever noticed this or looked into it. When you look at the East Coast, Sasquatch compared to the West Coast Sasquatch, it seems like they're more violent over on the East Coast than they are on the West Coast. Because when you look at all the sightings of attacks, you know, actual physical attacks and stuff, it's always been on the East Coast. Here in Ohio, we had one in, you know, like 1868, I think it was, where, which they talked about on Monster Quest, where the father and daughter was walking down the road and this thing attacked and killed the father. Yeah. You know, and, even like, you know, a lot of the stuff up in upper state New York with their sightings up there. I think I can't remember the author, the one who wrote Monsters of the Northwest Woods and stuff. I think he talks about, you know, some attacks up there. And then you look at, well, Boggy Creek, you know, with the attacks and stuff that happened down there and the attacks that happened down in Florida with the skunk ape and stuff like that. But you really don't hear too much other than Native American folklore of attacks, you know, except for, you know, Fred Beck and those guys out there in Ape Canyon, which, you know, I kind of really, you know, the more I look at that, I kind of think that, you know, I don't think anything really happened there because I've seen photographs of the cabin that they were in. And it doesn't look like it got tore apart, you know, by big boulders and this. I just think these guys found gold and they wanted to make a story up to keep people out of the area, you know, and stuff. But, you know, it was called Ape Canyon for a reason, you know, because they've had a lot of sightings and stuff in that area, you know, but you don't hear too much, like you said, of, attacks or anything going on out there in the Pacific Northwest like you do out here in the East Coast.
Right.
And stuff. So, the Sasquatch that's been seen in your area, what is the typical description that you guys are getting? Because, like, here in Ohio, you know, we're getting brownish red hair. We're getting, you know, almost like a grayish color hair, almost like a white. We've had some that were black, you know, in color. But the physical has basically been all the same. Now, are you getting anything similar to that up there, or is it just basically, you know, just one particular type of sighting?
No, we're getting similar to you. We're getting many different types of descriptions. I've heard of the reddish brown colored creature. I've heard of the black, you know, just all black. My two of my kids had a sighting back in 2005. Theirs was a grayish silver in color, almost an ash color, which is very, very similar to the color of some of the tree bark out here.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sighting that color. So, you know, yeah, it's a pretty wide range of different colors. Now, we haven't had any reports of any white ones.
Yeah.
Reddish brown. The ones I hear of the most are the black, reddish brown, and the gray silver color.
Mm-hmm. You know, these scenes can blend in so well. I mean, it's just like even deer. I mean, Salt Fork is a good example. I mean, the deer are almost like this brown color, you know, and they blend in so well because you can walk right upon them and those things will move, you know, and I mean, you don't see them because they blend in so well. And it's, you know, I think, you know, these Sasquatch, they have, you know, their own, you know, camouflage within their, you know, their fur that they're able to sit and blend in. Because like I said, on my sighting, you know, there was three other people, you know, that was with me when I had my sighting. And like I said, if he would not moved or moved a muscle or anything, we would have never, ever, ever seen him. We would have went right past him.
Right.
And we were at least 12 to 18 feet, maybe 15 feet, somewhere around there. You know, we were that close. And like I said, we didn't see him, and he was directly in front of us.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and stuff. And, you know, I mean, the woods, you know, you sit there and wonder how many times you walk past them. You know,
yeah.
Seriously. I mean, because, you know, you can smell them. You know, yeah. You know, people say they smell like a wet dog. They smell like a, you know, a skunk. But, you know, guys like us that's been out in the woods long enough, we know what he smells like. You know, right. we know, and you know that he's you know, he's close by, right, and stuff. But what we're going to do real quick, Billy, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back here in a few minutes.
All right.
All right.
Tune in to Miami Town Ghost Talk every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at www.asprn.com with the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Hosts Mike and Jeff, authors of Haunted Cincinnati and Southwest Ohio, plan to delve into the subject of ghosts, UFOs, and cryptoids, talking to investigators, authors, and so much more. Tune in every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. for Miami Town Ghost Talk. The All Souls Paranormal Radio Network brings you some of the hottest paranormal radio on the net. Check out www.asprn.com to listen to archives, read about upcoming events, check the schedule, or to listen live every night for great paranormal radio. ASPRN offers you some great radio starting Sunday with Dead Speak Radio and The Man Who Talks to Angels. On Monday, Para Investigators Radio and The Chat People Radio. Tuesday, Maps Radio and Miami Town Ghost Talk Radio. Wednesday, Haunted Times Magazine Radio, Embrace the Dark, Paranormal Outreach Radio, and Residual Hauntings Live. On Thursdays, Ohio Crypto Radio, EVP Spirit Talk Radio, and Paranormal Encounters Radio. And on Fridays, Behind the Veil, and Saturdays, Paratrinity Radio. So be sure to tune in to www.asprn.com and click Listen Live.
Have you heard the stories of Bobby Mackey's music world being haunted? Maybe you heard the stories from others. Maybe you've seen it on the Travel Channel, or maybe you've seen it on World's Scariest Places. Either way, here is your chance to find out if the stories are true. Come down to Bobby Mackey's every Friday and Saturday and join us and KYPS and our partner group Craps as we host the Haunted Ghost Tours at Bobby Mackey's. Tours are only $5 per person and last approximately a half an hour. We know it's haunted. We have the evidence to prove it. Maybe you'll have an experience of your own or collect evidence of your own. Hope to see you there.
Are you hearing bumps in the night? We'll help you find the answers you desperately need. Get your paranormal radio fix for the week. Tune in to Para Investigators Radio with Kurt and Bill. Every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's each and every Monday night at 9 Eastern in Studio A. Only on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Join the crew from NKYPS for Paranormal Outreach Radio every Wednesday night, kicking off the Paranormal Powerhouse lineup. Mike, Matt, and Crystal turning up the heat with a variety of guests from the paranormal community. There'll be fun, laughter, and a bit of information dealing with the paranormal issues. Join us every Wednesday night on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
All right, we are back with Billy Willard. All right, Billy, real quick, anything new that you want to put out or anything like that that's going to be coming up soon in Virginia that you might know about, or, you know, do you have a conference that you're going to be coming up with soon?
We've actually pushed around the idea of having a conference in Virginia. What I'm trying to do is, you know, trying to determine if Eric is going to continue the East Coast Conference up in Pennsylvania, because I don't want to conflict with anything that he's doing. He's been doing it for a while himself, but you know, we may here in the near future push around the idea of having a conference here in Virginia. So. You know, don't be surprised if you don't see something come along the pike, you know, next year or something. So,
now, were you you were mentioning? I don't know if it was you or Eric that was mentioning that they trying to get like an East Coast convention or something like that going with the different researchers on the East Coast?
Yeah. Me and Eric were discussing that. We were talking about combining, you know, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, Sasquatch Watch of Virginia, you know, combining a bunch of people to help out to do one big conference and try to find a nice central location on the East Coast to do something like that. Of course, you'd have to find a pretty good size facility.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always fun.
Well, you know, the thing about, you know, the different paranormal conferences that I've done, you know, compared to the Bigfoot stuff. In the paranormal conferences, you know, we have like one day where you have all the speakers and everything. And like on Sundays, they'll sit there and they'll have like workshops, which is really interesting. And, you know, that is something that really needs to be done in you know, the crypto stuff. It's just have a day on how to collect evidence, how the proper way of making a cast, just different things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea, Jody. I mean, you could do something like that. I mean, it would be extremely easy to do, for example, a casting class. I mean, you could literally have you like kind of like a sandbox, you know, and some sand in it, put your footprint in there, show people how to properly mix the casting material, how to place it in the print. I mean, that would be a really easy thing to do.
Yeah, you know, Don, I he doesn't know if he's even going to do his tour that he does, you know, this conference. You know, that, you know, I just think my seriously thing an email saying, you know, Don, won't you do work classes, you know, on, you know, Sundays, on that Sunday, just, you know, let anybody give a lecture about, you know, doing proper way of making a cast or the proper way of doing this, proper way of doing that, collect evidence and things like that. You know, no one's got to charge for it. It's just let the people know this is what's going on Sunday. You know, and I think that'd be a really good idea. And I'm going to ask them about that because that'd be something really interesting. You know, just to make up for, you know, Sunday and stuff. Now, when you're going down, are you staying down there Sunday night too and leaving on Monday or?
Yeah, we're staying down there and not leaving until Monday. So we'll be down there for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and leave Monday.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about doing and stuff. Because after everybody's gone Sunday, you can get back out into the field, you know, and thing. I think that'd be, you know, kind of interesting and stuff. Yeah, right. Because, you know, there's definitely something there at Salt Fork, but just recently, you know about this where, you know, Salt Fork kind of came out and said, hey, you know, we own a Bigfoot costume and we use it for promotional stuff. I mean, they're really digging this stuff because, you know, Zantera, who owns Salt Fork, Witten Woods, and like three, I think, other facilities in Ohio, you know, they bought, you know, my book for two of my books for all of their stores there. And now they're talking about getting Bigfoot t-shirts made up, you know, Bigfoot's here at Salt Fork, Bigfoot's here at Witten Woods and stuff, you know. And, you know, they see money when it comes to this because, you know, as well as I do, you know, that Bigfoot conference makes that park, you know, like turn, you know, it goes to black. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, they make their, you know, budget, you know, because of this conference and stuff, and they see money in it. And, you know, when I was out there a few weekends ago, I talked with someone that, you know, goes out into the woods there, you know, and stuff. And I told Don, I said, you know, you need to nip that in the bud because, you know, every time, you know, a sighting comes up at Salt Fork, it's going to be debatable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they were just, the weekend I was down there, that week prior had three sightings. And Don didn't even know nothing about the sightings, and he found out about it through the newspaper.
Right.
You know, and it's like, now, are those three sightings credible, or are those three sightings because somebody's running around the woods, you know, with that costume, which I find it very dangerous because they do have a hunting section there, and if someone sees it, they're going to drop them.
Right.
You know, and it's just a bad situation, and, you know, I just hope, you know, they can get that sorted out because, like I said, it's going to credibility-wise, it's going to tear that place apart, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong. It's nothing wrong, really, of keeping it within the confines of the building, you know, for the event and stuff like that.
Well, see, that's one thing, if they're going to have it for the event.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but when you go outside of that building, walk around somewhere out in a field or in the woods, you know, quite frankly, everybody needs to understand, hunting section or no hunting section, a lot of people get like these dollar signs in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think that's their $1 million ticket, and they don't care if they're in an area, the hunting area or not in a hunting area. I mean, let's face it, there are some people out there like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, it's a, you know, I'm working on another book with a guy named Jeff. And, you know, we're talking about different stuff in there like that. It's the Beginner's Guide to Bigfoot Research. You know, actually, that was, hopefully it was supposed to be out, but there's stuff being added to it and stuff. And we talk about that, you know, where Bigfoot, you know, where this thing is, I mean, it's protected. I mean, they're... I can't say they got hidden laws, but they have stuff that's written up already for when something happens. You know, they don't have to sit there and waste any time getting things done. It's already written out. Boom, there it is. Get the thing protected. And,
right.
You know, people think, well, you know, I'm going to drop him and I'm going to go take his head. And, you know, then I got evidence and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, everybody's going to, you know, want to interview me and stuff. They'll interview you behind bars because, for one, you know, if it's on state property, federal property, or county property, and you take it off, that's theft. You're going to go to jail. Two, you're going to go to jail for mutilating the animal's corpse, you know, real quick, you know, because you're going to have everybody, you know, after you wanting to hang you on that one, you know. And, people don't realize that. And, you know, I talked to a lot of different states about this. I mean, you know, these people... they're very serious. Everybody knows that there's something there, but until they have an actual body laying there, then that's when all that information, every state's going to have stuff, and it's going to come out. Because every state's, you know, has been seeing these things and reporting, and, you know, like here in Ohio, Division of Wildlife, we know, you know, they know there's something definitely here, but right now they're not going to admit to it, because the minute they come out and say, yep, something's here, you know, they have to come up somewhere with funding. And that means they're going to have to take it out from someplace else, and people are going to get laid off, and they're not going to do it, you know. And, you know, in the Ohio Park books, I don't know if you knew about this, where they had that big article about the Bigfoot and, you know, the Ohio parks,
right.
You know, and they pulled that magazine. You can't find that one anymore because, the ODNR pulled it because right there they admit that we have their Bigfoot that runs around the parks,
right.
You know, and, you know, because that magazine comes out like every other month, I think it was. And, you know, you can't even find copies of that one anymore. You know, I got a few of them, but, you know.
Yeah, I've got a copy of that as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, but it talks about the neat thing. It talks about all the paranormal stuff in all the state parks, and a lot of people don't know about that. There's a lot of paranormal stuff going on in a lot of these state parks. They got a lot of haunting stuff going on and things. And you know, if you look at the state parks on history, you'll be able to find some of this stuff. But anyhow, Billy, I appreciate you being on the show. I'd love to have you back on soon. Anything comes up. You know, you guys, any credible information that comes out from this sighting or from this expedition that you went on, something worthwhile, definitely get back with me. We'll get you guys on there and we'll talk about it. Now, next week, I'm going to have Melissa from the American Bigfoot Society, and she's the head of it. And Melissa's going to, we're basically going to be talking about collecting evidence and the proper way of making casting and snow and things like that a lot of people don't know. So that's going to be a really good show also.
Yep.
And we're also going to talk a little bit more about this expedition that went on. But, Billy, I appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show. And, you know, definitely keep in touch with us and let us know if anything new comes about.
All right, I will do that, Jody.
All right, and I want to thank everybody for listening. And, you know, it was a good show. It was a good night. So... like I said, next week's going to be a really, really good one. Actually, next couple shows coming up are going to be really good, too. A lot of the interesting stuff. I got a couple eyewitnesses that are going to be coming on, you know, and stuff. So, but like I said, everybody, you have a good night. I appreciate it, and I will see you next Thursday. Take care.
All right, good night.
All right, good night.
Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Join Residual Hauntings live every Wednesday night at 11 Eastern on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Residual Hauntings live will bring you the best of the best, and not to mention the Paranormal Ninja. So wind your Wednesday down with Residual Hauntings live at 11 Eastern on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.